What difference do differences make in successful long-term relationships? The research might surprise you, but I bet it's also going to encourage you. Stay tuned.
If your desire is to become spiritually stronger, emotionally healthier, and relationally smarter, you're at the right place. Speaker and writer Stephanie Smith inspires and equips you to achieve these three key aims. If you're a parent, you also learn how to raise empowered kids ready for adulthood. Let's get started.
Welcome back to the Life's K3 episode, where, as you have heard around here, the whole goal is to do what? It is to build people who are spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart. And over the last few weeks, we have been going through a mini series on that last element, which is to be relationally smart. And this isn't information that is only if you are in a marriage relationship and it's not just between you and friends. These are principles that you can apply in every relationship that you have. Yes, even work relationships, because there are principles that apply to human behavior because it's just how we're designed and it's how the world functions. And when we learn those principles, the application can vary depending on our setting, but the principles don't change. And that is actually one of the wonderful things about learning principles behind behavior, because then we don't have to try to think we're starting over with every new type of relationship that we have an engagement in or we have a responsibility to. I'm going to share the results of some research with you today that might surprise you, and I believe it will also encourage you. And we're going to talk about how we can learn from this to grow our own healthy, long-term, successful relationships. Before I jump into that, I want to encourage you to do two things. Number one, leave a rating and review for the podcast. That helps other people to discover the podcast and to know, hey, this is worth listening to. It also helps me to know what is resonating with you, the listener. And secondly, if you haven't already, hop on over to the website, stephaniepresents.com, and you can sign up for the weekly newsletter, High Impact. Okay, let's get back to how we can become relationally smarter. The research that I've mentioned is not just one study. There are multiple studies that have been done over a period of time that have looked at long-term successful relationships. And it is astounding to discover that one of the key differences is that people succeed, have is, and maybe even more than relationships that fail, or that relationships might stay together, but we wouldn't call them successful. Because it's not just about the amount of time that people stay connected. It's also about the quality of life that they have. And where a lot of this research has focused on married couples, the principles apply equally as well to other relationships that we have. So whether these are between friends, they are between parents and adult children, they're between even coworkers and in professional settings, there is value that we can apply by learning these principles. It makes sense. It's kind of natural to think that the fewer differences that people have, the better that they are going to get along. But actually, it turns out to be just the opposite. Now, don't misunderstand what I am saying here. It's not a matter that the research shows that you have to have lots and lots of differences in order to have a successful relationship. That's not the case. So if you're in a relationship or you're looking at getting into a relationship, and you're like, oh, I don't know, because it seems like we have so many things in common. Well, don't let that spook you and think, oh, that kind of sets us up for a bad relationship. We want to look at what the research says, and we don't want to try to draw in things that aren't there. So what does it show then about these people who have long-term relationships that are healthy and good and enjoyable and meaningful relationships, and yet they have so many differences? I mean, how Can that happen? How does that work? Well, what they learn to do is they learn to depersonalize the differences. Either differences, they learn to enjoy them or they learn to accept them. And I don't mean that kind of acceptance where it's like gritted teeth. Okay, I guess if you really have to be that way, I guess I'll somehow have to find a way to put up with it. I'm not talking about that kind of what we call acceptance, which really isn't acceptance, but it's a genuine acceptance of, okay, that's you. That's your opinion. That's how you like to do things. Okay, that's good for you. It's not my deal, but I am not going to be upset and triggered and angry. I'm not going to run like this low grade relational fever against you because of these differences. So how does a person get to this point? Because it doesn't just happen. And that's also something that we want to be aware of, is that when researchers are looking at people who have been in these relationships for decades, often multiple decades, we have to remember that they are at a point where they've had time to work through some of these things. But the value is that we don't have to think it only takes time, because here's the thing, time doesn't heal anything. And time by itself doesn't just automatically make anything better. It's only what we do during that time that is going to make a difference. So if we're going to learn to depersonalize rather than defend, what are some practical steps that we can take? The first step is that we learn to distinguish between what is style and what is substance. So many of the things in our lives that we can get so triggered by and we can get so frustrated about, when we really look at it, it's just a matter of style. It's not about substance. It's not about ethics or morals. It's not about life and death decisions. To be certain, those are there. Everything isn't style, but everything also isn't substance. You know, sometimes this is easy where it just comes down to very practical things. Like a couple says, well, what are we going to feed the kids? Like what's their nutrition, you know, going to be? Now, is there a point that it becomes a matter of substance? Yes, it does. If your kids are eating nothing but corn chips and ice cream and drinking sodas all day long, okay, that is going to affect their health in a substantive way. However, we can also get to the point that we make things about substance that really aren't. They're stylistic difference. The more prosperous a society is, the more inclined its people are to conflate what is style with substance. Why? Because simply we are not dependent, perhaps, on survival from day to day. Now, please understand, I'm not advocating that in order to avoid this, that we try to go back to some sort of subsistence kind of living. But we do want to be mindful that with prosperity, it's not just all good stuff. There's also some potential downsides that we want to be aware of, and so that we don't get sucked into. If I'm not dependent on the people around me in order to, say, take care of my home or to be there to have support when I'm sick or if there's a storm that comes through, I can afford to actually never even go and meet them. But if I am dependent on the neighbors, like the physical neighbors that I have, in order to take care of me or my home or property or whatever, you can bet that I'm going to be far more intentional about building a relationship with them. And there are things that I'm not going to get as upset over, because it's like, okay, that's just a matter of style. And I'm going to focus on what's actually a matter of substance. And we have these silos that form about all kinds of things, everything from what kind of diapers do you put on your kids? I mean, that is a prosperous society argument that we can have, that we can afford to have, because we have those options. And while those choices can matter very much at an individual level, we want to make certain that we don't start assigning moral values to things that really are not intrinsically moral issues. Now, I get that this is a lot easier to talk about than it is to do, because we get pretty attached to the things that we like. We get pretty attached to the things that we have grown up with. We tend to associate a lot of emotions with how certain things are done. And it's not just always easy to get rid of those. But that's part of the work of maturing, is to identify, okay, is this really a matter of style, or is this a matter of substance? So that's one of the first steps that we want to take. The second step is we want to be specific about what's the difference that we're really focusing on, and then we keep it isolated. You know, if I put a photo up on my refrigerator, I use a piece of tape or I use a magnet, then that photo is going to be stuck there because it's dependent on something else to keep it in place. If I take that photo off and I start waving it around a bunch of other photos, the other photos aren't going to all of a sudden come, you know, clinging up to that photo. But if I take a magnet and I start putting it near other magnets, pretty soon I can have a whole string of magnets. And sometimes what we do with differences is, rather than treating them like the isolated photo, we treat them like magnets. And before long, we've added all these other things into our thinking that really have nothing to do with the particular difference that bugs us. If we're not careful, we can end up with a discussion perhaps about, okay, what kind of foods are the kids going to eat? You know, what's their nutritional lifestyle going to be like, and we can have some differences there. And before long, if we don't keep these things isolated, then it can turn into, are we even going to help pay for college? Well, you're probably not going to do that because you think it's perfectly fine for them to have ice cream or not or whatever. And so we want to be careful that we keep our specific differences identified, and then two, we keep them isolated. The third factor is we want to get curious about, why does this difference bug me? I mean, what's really going on here that I am offended, I'm upset, I'm triggered, I'm bugged, whatever, because of this difference of opinions, this difference of how things ought to be done in the world, whether it's about politics, it's about political parties, it is about how we raise our kids. It's about how somebody does their job. It's what kind of car a person drives. What kind of lifestyle do they have? There's always stories that we are telling ourselves about the things that bug us. And we want to be careful that we don't start making judgments about someone's moral character, their ethics, or their values, their priorities, really based on things that aren't about substance. They're just about stylistic differences. The next thing that we want to be careful of is not to start projecting. And this is a little close to the second one I talked about, where the reason we want to keep it isolated is because if we don't, then pretty soon what we're going to do is we're going to start projecting. Well, I guess if you think that, you know, then that must mean that you also believe this. And if you don't think the kids should be able to do that, well, I guess that you're never going to let them out of the house. I mean, it's just kind of ridiculous sometimes when we really start looking at what we are projecting into the future about what's going to happen in our relationship, or what's going to happen with our kids or our colleagues or our business or whatever. Don't get caught up in the trap of projecting about all of the future over a difference that you have for today. The other step, we've talked about this over the last couple of episodes, is search for solutions and stay away from stereotypes. If you want to bring up and talk about a difference because you think it's a problem, and sometimes it is, sometimes there are real problems that you have to bring up in a relationship and you have to talk about, okay, come with a solution. If you don't have at least one idea for a solution, maybe you're not really ready to talk about the problem. I understand that sometimes it's in the process of talking about something that solutions come to mind. But most of the time, we can think of one solution if we really make ourselves work at it. And if we don't, that might be a clue for us to say, maybe what I'm really wanting to do here is I'm just wanting to build my case so that you will change. And that doesn't turn out to be too effective in the long run. But if it's a matter of, I want to bring this difference to the table so we can see, okay, how do we navigate this, rather than so I can point out to you and I can build my case about why you're wrong and why you need to change, not going to work out well. Let's stay away from stereotypes, whether these are about genders, whether these are about age, whether these are about generations. You know, we have a lot of that going on these days. Are you a boomer? Are you an Xer? Are you an alpha? I mean, whatever. And we want to be careful that we make that distinction between learning about things and trends and traits that can help, and also not creating stereotypes from those. Evaluate your expectations. We've talked about that a couple of episodes ago as well, because behind every difference, there is a set of expectations. There's a set of expectations for myself, and there's a set of expectations for someone else. And until I can get down to the level of expectations, not just communicating about how I feel, but until I can get down to the level of expectations, I'm not really prepared to solve a problem. It's not enough just to be able to say, this is what I think, this is what I feel. That's helpful, but too often that's where we stop, because a lot of times that's really all that we're taught about. We're taught about these communication techniques that have value, but they don't go deep enough. And sometimes, as I've talked about before, that's why we just stay stuck and we just kind of keep cycling around with problems rather than actually solving them. And again, solving differences does not mean that we always have to come to agreement. And it's not just like, oh, well, as long as this person, I have to find a way to get them to agree with me to erase the difference. So many times what we really need to do is to learn to accept the difference. And again, not in that gritted teeth kind of way, but with its where it's a true acceptance of saying, you know what? This isn't my way. It's not how I would like things to go. It has a different priority value to me. It has a different emotional meaning to me. But really, at the end of the day, what difference does that difference really make? And if we learn to accept and depersonalize from the differences that really aren't going to matter 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years from now, then we can save our energy to focus on those differences that do matter and that do require a resolution, a coming to some sort of agreement in order for a relationship to work. Because there does have to be both. I mean, you can't have every kind of difference and every kind of aspect of life and just say, well, you do you and you do you, because at some point that isn't going to work. But if we can keep those things to what's really about substance and the other things that are about style, no matter how passionately we feel about our style, then we can have a much better chance of having those successful, happy, long-term relationships that we desire. Now, another critical part of this research, and one of the fundamental differences for people who learn to set aside their differences, and again, in a healthy way, is because they get busy living life. They have goals to pursue. They have so much that they want to do individually and together. They don't have a bunch of time to waste. They don't want to spend all this emotional energy batting around and arguing about differences and fussing about differences because they got stuff to do. And sometimes that's a cue to us when we are spending so much of our emotional energy, we're spending so much of our time and our mental energy in trying to talk about and focus on and all these differences. Sometimes that's a cue to us that we need to really look at what's going on in our lives. What are we doing in order to identify and reach our potential and our purpose? And what are we accomplishing as in our relationship here? Maybe that's with a team at work. Maybe it's in a marriage. Maybe it's just in a broader sense of a family. You know, people that have things that they are accomplishing, they have a purpose, they have goals, they have vision. These are the people who just don't get bogged down in a bunch of drama. And a lot of times drama gets centered around differences. But these are people who deal with issues so that they can get on with the business of life. So take a look at the differences. Identify the ones that bug you, because we all have them, right? No matter whether they're small or whether they're big. Find creative ways to put some distance between you and those differences. Identify, okay, what style, what substance, how can I depersonalize so that I don't take this difference as some sort of attack on me? Because sometimes it's just a difference. And we don't need to assume that because someone has a different way of doing something, well, that automatically means that they are dissing my way of thinking or my way of showing up. No. That's the mark of a person who is insecure. And the more insecure a person is, the more they are going to be threatened by differences. But the thing is that one of the ways that we become more secure is we have to go through this work of saying, okay, I am going to identify that difference. Is that a matter of substance or style? Okay, how can I depersonalize from this? What are the things I really do need to resolve? And what are the things that I need to walk away from? And I need to say, it's not about me. It's just a difference. I don't need to project. I don't need to be fearful. I don't need to try to fix that. I can actually let. All right, my friend, and that is going to wrap us up for today. And again, if you haven't already, sign up for the weekly newsletter, High Impact, at the website, stephaniepresents.com. And remember this, you have an impact that is immeasurable, eternal, and irreplaceable. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening. Visit the website, stephaniepresents.com, and sign up for High Impact to join the mission of building spiritually strong, emotionally healthy, and relationally smart women and families. You can also book Stephanie to speak at your event and check out additional resources. Together, we can invite and equip generations to engage fully in God's grand story.